Om Sam Saraswati Namaha. Let's look at the last verse of chapter 1. It says, now I declare more of the glory of the goddess. Listen as I speak to you. So here he has explained all about the manifestation of Mahakali coming to take away too much and too little and put them in balance. And now he's going to go on to narrate another story to the king and the businessman. Remember, Samhadi and Surat are sitting at the feet of Medas Muni. The businessman, Samhadi, pure intuitive vision, lost his business. The king, good thoughts, has lost his kingdom. Both of them have taken refuge at the feet of the intellect of love, and they want to hear more of the glory of the goddess, and he's going to tell them. This is chapter 2. The application, Om, presenting the middle episode, the consciousness that pervades all is the seer, the great goddess of true wealth is the deity. Ushnig, 28 syllables to the verse is the meter, and remember, that's the meter of sustaining. So in the first episode, we have the meter of the beginning. The second episode, the middle episode, is the meter of sustaining. And the third episode, or last episode, is the meter of culmination. Shakambhuri is the energy, she who nourishes with vegetables. Shak. Durga is the seed, air is the principle, Yajurveda is the intrinsic nature for the satisfaction of the great goddess of true wealth, Mahalakshmi. This middle episode is being applied in recitation. Now the meditation. She with the beautiful face, the destroyer of the great ego, is seated upon the lotus of peace. In her hands she holds the rosary of alphabets, the battle axe of good actions, the club of articulation, the arrow of speech, the thunderbolt of illumination, the lotus of peace, the bow of determination, the water pot of purification, the staff of discipline, energy, the sword of worship, the shield of faith, the conch of vibrations, the bell of continuous tone, the wine cup of joy, the pike of concentration, the net of unity, and the discus of revolving time, named excellent intuitive vision. I worship that great goddess of true wealth. Om Hrim, the Rishi said. In former times, the forces of peace and divinity had a dreadful encounter with the forces of thought, which continued for a full 100 years. The commander of the army of thought was the great ego, and the leader of the army of clear perception was the rule of the pure. So here we have Mahishasura, Maha, Isha, Asura. Mahan means great, Isha means ruler, Asura means duality. The great ruler of duality, this Mahishasura, he's called here the great ego. Indra is the ruler of heaven, the ruler of the gods, the king of all the gods. The gods are the purest attributes in manifestation. And Indra is the ruler of all the pure. Yes, please.
Is it 100 years because that's the average life of a man's life?
Not necessarily. It says Purnamabda Shatangpura, a full 100 years. It could be 100 divine years. It could be 100 years of a man's life. It could be just that they fought for 100 years. A long, long time. That's what it stands for.
It seems like our lives are close to 100 years, and we've been doing this for a long, long time.
Well, we've been doing it for many lifetimes together, too, so I don't get off so easily. The army of the gods was vanquished by the very powerful thoughts, And all the gods being subdued, the great ego assumed the authority of the rule of the pure. So he sat down on Indra's throne and kicked all the gods and goddesses out of heaven. Then the defeated gods, led by the lotus-born lord of being, Brahma, went to where the supreme consciousness and the brilliance that pervades where all were staying. That's, they went, Brahma and all the gods went to Vishnu and Shiva. And the gods gave the narration of the exploits of the great ego at length and told of their defeat by the forces of thought. The authority of the light of wisdom, the rule of the pure, the light of meditation, emancipation, devotion, the power that controls, the Lord of equilibrium, and all other gods has been usurped by the great ego, and now he governs over all. So he's taken away all the pure qualities, all the pure attributes of all the divine beings, and now everyone who does anything does it for the ego. No one does anything without saying, I am the doer. They're all having some selfish interest in accomplishing whatever activity they choose to perform. That wicked ego has cast all the gods from heaven, and now in the manner of men, they wander about the earth. They forget completely that we're gods and goddesses. We think that we're human beings ad nauseum, wandering on the earth, burdened by the responsibilities of life.
Ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous.
Absurd.
Totally
absurd. That ego will have to teach him a lesson. Now, all that the thoughts have done has been reported to you. We have come for your protection. Now you, please, think of the manner of their destruction. Actually, in the commentary on this chapter, we find that the great ego did a tremendous tapasya. Brahma came to him and said, what would you want? And Mahishasur, the great ego, said, I want to be immortal. I will never die. Brahma said, that's impossible. Choose another wish. Everything that is born must die. I can't give you the wish. The ego thought about it for a moment. He said, if I have to die, then let my death occur at the hands of a woman. And Brahma said, why on earth would you want such a boon? And the ego said, well, I'm so strong. If I don't have to worry about the men, then what woman is there that could possibly defeat me? And Brahma immediately said, Tathastu, I give you the boon. I give you the boon. Your death will occur at the hands of a woman. Then the slayer of too much, Vishnu, remember, he slayed too much and too little? And the bliss of being, that's another name of Shiva, became enraged over the conduct of the thoughts, and their faces frowned in anger. And in excessive rage, a great light emanated from the face of he who holds the discus of revolving time, Vishnu, and from the creative capacity, Brahma, and the consciousness of infinite goodness as well, Shiva. They all put forth light from their frowning faces. And the rule of the pure and all the other gods too emitted great lights from their bodies, and all the lights united to form one light of radiant splendor. Everybody project forth your light. That's what the Havan is about. all the gods and goddesses sit around the divine fire, and we all project our lights, and all the lights unite into one light of radiant splendor. There, the gods saw that great collection of light, like a blazing mountain that pervaded all the directions with its flames. And the flames rise higher and higher, and there's just no way you can contain that fire. The light that comes from the united light of all the gods and goddesses in order to invoke the Divine Mother to come in the form of light, in the form of fire, there is nothing with which we can compare it. There was nothing to compare with this light, great minds think alike, that emanated from the bodies of all the gods, and after collecting into one, it assumed a feminine form whose illumination was apparent throughout the three worlds. So here all these lights are uniting into one light of radiant splendor, and it's becoming the manifestation of the Divine Mother. It's assuming a feminine form. From the light that had come from the source of bliss to existence, her face became manifest. Now here's a Nyasa. This is just like the Devi Kavach. You can feel each place in your body as the light emanates and it assumes that position. The body of the Divine Mother becomes manifest. This is a Nyas. Please observe in your own being as the divinity becomes manifest. From the light it come from the source of bliss to existence, her face became manifest. From the power that controls her hair, and from the consciousness that pervades all her arms. From the light of devotion came her breasts, and from the light of the rule of the pure her midsection. From the light of the Lord of Equilibrium came her legs and thighs, and from the light of earth her buttocks and hips. From the light of the creative capacity came her feet, and from the light of radiance, her toes. From the finders of the wealth came her fingers, and from the guardian of the treasure, her nose. All of her teeth came from the Lord of Being, and from the clarity of meditation, her three eyes became apparent. From the light of the time of worship, her eyebrows were manifested, and from desiring excellence, her ears came into being. And all the other gods, too, gave their lights to the formation of the energy of infinite goodness. Every time we chant these passages, just feel the goddess taking birth. Feel her coming into manifestation in this being. All the gods are giving their lights. And now this being is the manifestation of the united light of all the gods. And that's the meditation. As the goddess stands up and begins to radiate like a blazing pillar of fire. Then the gods, who were troubled by the great ego, seeing the grandeur of the goddess manifested from their united lights, experienced extreme joy. Can I see some happy gods? Yes. Absolutely. Extreme joy. The bearer of the trident of unity, that's Shiva, the Trishuludari, took from his trident another trident and presented it to the goddess. And then the doer of all, that's Vishnu, taking from it the discus of revolving time, manifested a second discus and bestowed it upon her. Equilibrium donated the conch of vibrations, and the light of meditation gave his energy. Emancipation gave his bow of determination and two quivers full of arrows. The rule of the pure with a thousand eyes took from his thunderbolt of illumination a second thunderbolt and presented it to the goddess, and from his elephant, who is named Love for All, a bell of continuous tone was donated. From the power that controls came the staff of discipline, and the Lord of Equilibrium presented the net of unity. The Lord of Being, the rosary of letters, the creative capacity, the bowl of renunciation. The divine being of light filled the pores of her skin with rays of light, and time gave the sword of worship and a brilliant shield. The ocean of pure thoughts gave a necklace of excellent gems and garments which never lose their luster, and donated earrings, a divine crest and bangles, and a halo of light. The radiant half-moon gave bracelets for her arms, anklets for her feet, a beautiful neck ornament, and rings of precious stones for her fingers. And the universal doer gave his extremely holy acts of good action. All manner of weapons and impenetrable armor was presented to protect her head and breast, and from true wealth, a garland of lotuses was given that would never lose its luster. The sea presented a beautiful lotus, the blessing of peace, and the Himalayas gave the jewel of the lion of courage upon which to ride. Dharma becomes manifest in the courageous fortitude symbolized as the lion that is the conveyance of the goddess. The Lord of Wealth gave a drinking vessel constantly full of intoxicating spirit, somras, the nectar of devotion. And the ultimate, shesh, the Lord of all serpents of energy by which the earth is sustained, gave great jewels that shine luminously in a necklace of serpents. Other gods, too, bestowed ornaments and weapons upon the goddess. After being worshipped, again and again she laughed and roared in a high tone, and her dreadful sound resounded through the ether. The goddess caused such an excessive noise that caused all the worlds to quake and the oceans to rage. The earth rocked and the mountain shook, and the gods were extremely pleased and joyfully cried out to the lion rider, Jai Ma! Victory! Jai! Victory to you! And with great satisfaction, the wise people praise the image of their worship, bowing with devotion, Namastasye, 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 Namo Namaha. Seeing the three worlds in such a commotion, the army of thoughts adorned their armor, took up their weapons, and stood together. The great ego, in excessive anger, exclaimed, Ah! What is this? Then, along with all the thoughts that had assembled, ready to attack, he ran towards that ultimate sound and saw the goddess illuminating the three worlds. Her feet stood upon the earth, and her crown touched the furthest reaches of the atmosphere. Her being fills all of existence, from the immanent to the transcendent, from the very close to the very far away, from the earth to the divine. The twang of her bowstring sent fear through the seven regions of hell. The thousand arms of this goddess covered all the directions. And then began the battle between the goddess and the thoughts. Many kinds of weapons illuminated the entire atmosphere in flight. And a very powerful general of the great ego, devoid of clear understanding, rose to do battle. I don't understand. I just can't get it. I'm confused. I just don't understand. Explain it to me. Logically. Convince me that I shouldn't fulfill every desire I have. That heroic general, devoid of clear understanding. Fickleness waged battle with his four divisions of horses, elephants, chariots, and infantry of great strength. And haughtiness joined in the fray with 60,000 chariots. With hundreds and of thousands, the great deceiver, that little scheming demon, the great deceiver, always trying to take advantage of the little edge, will get them on a technical difficulty. And with his army of 10 million foot soldiers, want of resolution, a great thought came to battle. Gee, maybe I should go over there. No. Maybe I should try this. I'd like to try this sadhana. Well, maybe that one didn't work. That wasn't fun. I'll try that sadhana. Well, I want to be spiritual, but I'd love to enjoy the world too. Let me see. Which one should I do? With 6 million soldiers, memories entered the battlefield. And with thousands of elephants and horses, wandering to and fro. Hypocrisy joined in the fighting with 5,000 million chariots assembled and moreover tens of thousands of great thoughts on elephants and horses. Wandering to and fro fought on in that battle with his chariots racing about. Get up! Get up! Go someplace else! This isn't fun anymore! There's other things you could be doing with your lives. Why are you wasting time here? Try over there! And others, too, continued to fight. Their chariots and elephants kept coming. The great thoughts fought and fought in that battle with the goddess. Uncountable thousands of warriors and chariots, horses and elephants accumulated there. The great ego himself joined in the battle with his large javelin, his small javelin, his energy and his mace. Other thoughts fought and fought in that battle and tried to strike the goddess with their swords, with all of their energies, and to bind her with their nets. They were trying to kill the goddess with their swords, and the goddess, she who tears apart thought, attacked them with her own weapons. Playfully, the goddess rained upon her attackers a shower of her own weapons and mantras, which cut all their weapons to pieces, while the gods and seers praised her with hymns and minds of divinity. That's where she got her energy. She became inspired by our devotion. That's what keeps her here. Fighting on our side. In her face was not the slightest exertion as the Empress of the Universe hurled weapon after weapon upon the bodies of her attackers. And the lion of the goddess, shaking its mane in rage, strolled through the army of thoughts like a forest conflagration. Each expiration of the breath of the mother of the universe manifested there as her army, numbering in hundreds and thousands, fighting in the battle with the axe, javelin, sword, and spear. And through the process of pranayama, her soldiers became manifest. The goddess and her immense army and her immense energy destroyed numbers of thoughts while beating on the drum and sounding the conch. You've all had that experience. Playing cymbals and swinging the club and the trident and raining energy in that festival of battle, the terrible noise of her bell stung the great thoughts to unconsciousness while she cut them with her sword. How many thousands fell to their death? See how many thoughts from which we have been liberated. Did the mind come to peace yet? Just watch all of those thoughts meet their demise in the battle with the Divine Mother. They have no more power to perplex us or to bind us. Many thoughts were bound by the net and dragged to the earth. Many thoughts were cut into two by the sharp edge of her sword. How many thoughts fell wounded to the earth from the impact of the club? How many were struck by the mace and became extremely injured? Some thoughts pierced in the breast by the pike fell to the earth in a heap. How many thoughts in that battlefield struck by a rain of arrows were cut apart? All the thoughts are meeting their demise. All of those thoughts have become personified, and we can watch them marching to their extinction in the battle with the Divine Mother. Until we become quite thoughtless. Several of the number of thoughts who had tormented the gods relinquished their vital breath. Many others lost their arms or necks or were reduced to dust. How many fell with their heads cut? How many with their bodies divided at the midsection? Many cut from the hips fell. Many lost a limb or an eye or were torn into two pieces. Many thoughts with their heads severed rose again as headless bodies in a terrible form to take up their arms and continue to battle with the goddess. Other headless torsos, like us, running around without our heads, dance to the rhythmic music of the battle. Well, have you ever lost your head?
You don't like to lost.
Oh. And many without heads raced about with their swords and energies and other weapons and shouted at the goddess, "Stop! Stop!" Where that terrible encounter took place, the earth was covered with chariots, elephants, horses, and thoughts that the goddess had caused to fall so that there was no possibility to find a path by which to come and go. From the army of thoughts and from their elephants and horses poured forth so much blood as to create a great river. Within an instant, that gigantic army of thoughts perished before the Mother of the Universe. Just as grass and timber are reduced to ashes in a moment by a great fire. And that lion, shaking its mane to and fro and roaring loudly, extracted the life force from many thoughts, and thus the goddess and her army waged battle with the multitude of the great thoughts, as the gods in heaven were extremely joyous and showered the earth with flowers. Chapter 2, the destruction of the armies of the great ego. All those thoughts meeting their demise, just like grass and timber are reduced to ashes by a forest conflagration. Are there any questions? Yes, please, Doctor.
On verse 10, it says, "And in excessive rage, a great light emanated." So from Shiva, Brahma, and Vishnu, this mother was created as a result of excessive rage. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Well, Shiva and Brahma and Vishnu are feigning rage in order to bring out the light. So they're showing that I'm not going to accept this faulty behavior of the Asuras. And so they're demonstrating this anger so that the Divine Mother will come manifest. Remember, the great ego won the boon that he would only be destroyed by the female form. They're not going to do it themselves. In the last chapter, Vishnu said, okay, I'll do it myself. Brahma prayed to the Divine Mother. The Divine Mother woke up Vishnu. He cut off the heads of too much and too little. Put them right back into balance. In this chapter, with the great ego, Mahishasura, they are all recognized that Brahma gave this great ego the boon that he would be destroyed only by a woman. The Divine Mother herself will manifest in order to take all the energy away from the ego so that the ego and his mighty army will fail and all the gods can go back to heaven. And that's just what's happening here. So their anger is an uncontrollable rage. Their anger is a pretense of anger so that they can ask divinity to come and manifest. Now here comes the Divine Mother in the form of light. All the gods project their lights onto this form. And then she becomes manifest with a beard and all. And she becomes manifest part by part. Her face and her arms and her breast and her thighs and her hips and her buttocks and her feet and her toes and her fingers. And then she becomes armed and she gets her trishul and her chakra and her shankha. And she gets all her weapons and the gods experience excessive joy. Just knowing the Divine Mother is there waiting to defend us. And that's what's going on in chapter 2. The whole meditation of how she manifests, how the gods are projecting their lights. Each of us projects our lights. And each of us becomes the manifestation of that divinity. And then that light, which is manifest in this form, takes on a feminine form. And I become the mother of the universe. The whole story is about us. We're the gods who were thrown out of heaven. We're the ones who prayed to the Divine Mother to come and send us back. And then we become the Divine Mother herself. And playfully watch all those thoughts as they're cut in half, meet their demise, extinguished like a forest conflagration. That's the substance of chapter 2. Yes, please.
As you were describing the raising of this flame and this light,
yes.
I was thinking of the Siddhakunjika spectrum.
Absolutely. Jwala, jwala, prajwala, prajwala.
It's that
yes.
Same kind of...
Burning, blazing, illuminating, rising. Dijagrang, dijagrang, throataya, throataya. Come rising, rising, burning, blazing, brilliantly shining. The same as the Kunjika Stotram, the song which gives the key to perfection. And that's the Havan is inside and the Havan is outside. This fire ceremony is actually the Kundalini rising and rising and rising. Remember, yajna comes from the root yuj, to unite. The union between the fire here and the fire out there is the yajna. That's what yajna means. The union between the fires. There is one light. And I am she. She manifests in our being. The one light. By taking all those thoughts, cutting them down. The thoughts will persist and try to attack. Don't sit there. Wander to and fro. You don't understand what you're doing anyway. How much of this do you realize? Do you understand? When you chant all this Sanskrit, what do you know? Look at the hypocrisy of it. Look at the arrogance. Look at the haughtiness. Look at all the generals in the army of the great ego. Memories, fickleness, foul mouth, irresistible temptation, blindness, the great frustration. These are the guys that are coming in next chapter. A little preview. Any other questions?
Swami?
Yes, please.
What are the seven regions of hell?
There are, just like there are seven regions of heaven, Bhur, Bhuva, Swa, Maha, Janha, Tapaha, Satyam. There are seven regions of hell, and I'm not very good at them anymore because I haven't been there in a long time. But there's... I beg your pardon. There's Abhal, Paptal, Atalital, I got three. Do you, Chetan, Kuzhazakarsik, can you help me? Do you know the seven regions of hell? Paptal, Atal, Talital, I got those. Okay. Manohar?
You know, I've been there, but I...
You didn't remember the name? Lalu to me, to Ishmael Kirchho. Man?
That's good news.
Can you imagine a whole family? Nobody remembers all seven layers of hell. Anywhere they're there. They are. And if you want, I'll go look them up again. But it's been a long time.
What does it mean, though?
There are various intensities of the reality of our suffering and pain. What we're calling pop, sin, is actually the confusion of egotistical attachment. What we're calling liberation is being attentive to our unity, so much in love that I cease to be here. So these regions of hell are greater and greater intensities of attachment to my selfish, egotistical nature.
So they're all sort of like levels of attention or consciousness.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're levels of of consciousness and states of attention and awareness. However, as we get lower and deeper into our own stuff, it gets another name. So there are seven levels of hell, as there are seven levels of heaven. Bhur, being one with all manifested existence, Buba being one as with all the concepts of the universe, Swa being illuminated with divine thought, Maha being the extent of all that can be conceived, Maha, Janaha, to all that can be known, Tapaha, all the light, to be one with all light, and Satyam, to be one with all truth, consciousness, and bliss. These are expansions of our consciousness. And as we go into the lower regions, we have contractions of the consciousness. We are bound to the concept of ego and attachment in greater and greater and greater degrees.
There's no relationship at all with places you go after you leave the body, or in between births.
Oh, there are a lot of people that live there while they're alive.
Yeah,
it's not something you have to go to after you leave your body.
Yeah.
You can live there. It's
the
a
mind.
Choice.
It's the mind, isn't it?
It is the mind, yes.
Yeah.
Did you have a question, Kamala?
No, I was just thinking it was when people really have no hope, they don't see light, they don't feel wisdom, they can't let it come in, they're just in utter darkness. Maybe people who are contemplating suicide, there's just no positive energies coming into their being. They're closed.
That sums it up. Vasato. Yes, Mom came up with another level of hell. Or Kichu. Yeah. Does anyone have anything? Yes.
The wicked ego cast out all the gods from heaven, and now in the manner of men, they wander about the earth.
Yep. Can you imagine that? I mean, just thinking ourselves to be human, just like human beings, we walk around the earth, and then we go even further, we draw lines on the earth and say, this is my earth, and that's your earth. Well, I don't consider them very canny.
I was reading the Lingam Purana. Are you familiar with that? Which
the Lingam Purana?
Verily, there is only suffering. Verily, there is only suffering. Is the first.
Sound like a Buddhist again.
That's what I mean. There is even the enlightened Buddha.
Yes. I don't know how canny they are. Yes, please.
Why does the great ego, if the great ego is doing tapasya for selfish reasons, then why does he get a boon?
Everyone who does tapasya gets a boon, whether they do sadhana for selfish reasons or sadhana for unselfish reasons. Just as there are three gunas of nature, sattva, raja, and tama, in the same way there are three qualities of sadhus, sattva, raja, and tama. Tamasic sadhana says, please cause injury to my enemies. Aren't we doing that right now, sending missiles and bombs and airplanes to the Middle East? Rajasic sadhana says, give me some benefit from my worship, from my tapasya. You do that sadhana every time you go to your office. Every time you see a patient thinking that you're going to get paid your fee. That's rajasic sadhana. And sattvic sadhana says, I just want to purify myself. And possibly that's what we do when we come here.
Yeah.
nobody gets any benefit. We just purify. And then we read in the Devi Gita in the 9th chapter, there's a fourth kind of sadhana, which is called parabhakti, supreme devotion. And that supreme devotion says, I just love you. And I'm doing this to demonstrate the sincerity of my love. That's my only intention, and that's my motivation, and that's the only objective of my performance, is to demonstrate to you the sincerity of my love. That's why I am doing what I'm doing. It's because I'm in love. That's the fourth kind. So there's tamasic sadhana, there's rajasic sadhana, there's sattvic sadhana, and there's paravakti. Seeks nothing for ourselves. Just wants to give.
I heard you say one time that if you do sadhana for impure reasons, you're not going to really get any result from it, or selfish reasons.
Yes, you misunderstood that. Yes. If you do sadhana for selfish reasons, you will get enhancement of your selfishness. You will receive the fruit of your karma, whether you like it or not. We will all enjoy the fruit of our karma that is called kripa. Kri means do. Ah means get. And what you do is what you're going to get. And that's the grace.
That's the boon.
That's the grace and that's the boon. Yes, please.
If two people were to perform the same actions, they would necessarily get the same karma if their intentions were different?
Correct.
Could you explain that
more? Yes. If someone performs... If two people perform the same action, one with selfish motivation and the other selflessly, they will not get the same result from that karma.
It's not a moral issue, really. It's more about your purpose.
Yes, your purpose and where your mind is when you're doing it. Because the person who does unselfishly is thinking what a privilege it is to do. And the purpose who does self, the person who does selfishly is thinking, oh my God, when will this ever end? I want to get it done as fast as I can. Where the other one says, I'm going to do it as efficiently as I possibly can. So the fruits that they receive will not be the same. Are there any other questions? Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Well, next time we'll go on to chapter 3 and we'll see how she causes the demise of the great ego. Jai Ma.